All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is American Vindicta. I'm your host, Doug Thornton. Today's date is March 23rd, 2022. And I have a new series that I'd like to talk to you about. I want to get off this paradigm of news and war and all that other fancy stuff that everyone else talks about and, you know, do something a little fun. So without further ado, we are starting a new topic of research. And I am sure many of you will be greatly will be greatly glad because of this. I know I'm going to enjoy it. I'm pretty sure you will too. But we are going to investigate the mysteries of our country's past and present. Welcome to American Vindicta's newest inquisitorial saga called America's Most Unexplained. This current topic, and we will go for as long as it needs to be, until there is no stone left unturned, is going to be over UFOs over the homeland. So consider this part one. On March 1st, in the year 1639, the governor of Massachusetts Bay Colony made a note in his diary of a strange aerial phenomena that occurred earlier in that year. A bright light that was in the sky that was observed by multiple Puritans in the basin of the Charles River. The light was described as follows. When it stood still, it flamed up and was about 3 yards square. That it ran as swift as an arrow was witnessed zooming across the skies in the night for over a distance of nearly 2 miles. Now, the strange light was also monitored by the local villagers of Charlestown. Not much else is recorded about this sighting, but let us take note that it was, so far as I can find, the first documented government official describing to us about UFOs. So that's pretty interesting. 1639. Now, I've always been fascinated with the topic of UFOs and the study into ufology. As a child, my mother and I witnessed what we believed to have been a UFO zipping back and forth across the night sky. I, like many of you, have always been a fan of the unexplained, and thus I now get the chance to explore the ideas, the topics in the history of America's Most Unexplained. Ever heard of Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program? Well, this was an unclassified government program that was recently created in 2007 and was being funded by the Department of Defense to a tune of $222 million until 2012, when the funding was inevitably canceled. Now, since the exposure of the Pentagon's ATIP program in December of 2017, the mainstream media has been covering this topic of UFOs almost weekly. Now, top producing shows like Tucker Carlson has been continuously interviewing experts in the field of UFOs, ufology, and former or current members of the federal government and the military in efforts to bring to light more information on this latest event with UFOs and our military. And if you don't know, we are talking about the TikTok UFO. Now, we're not going to get into that too much today. We're going to leave that for another time during this week. But here's the crazy part. There has always been a connection between our military and the UFO phenomena. Well documented during and after the events of World War II with the sightings of what many American pilots would call Foo Fighters, and even the Germans disclosed that they too were witnessing strange lights in the sky. But before we get too deep into this topic, let's review some relevant information from our federal government on this matter. From the National Archives, and you can go to www.archives.com. NASA.gov. And if you go to the search bar and you type in Project Blue Book, you will find some very interesting historical information. Let's read it, shall we? Project Blue Book, unidentified flying objects. And we have other relevant matter, the general information, the reference report relating to Project Blue Book, U.S. Air Force fact sheet on UFOs and Project Blue Book, reference report relating to Majestic 12, the MJ-12, and information of the Roswell incident. All right, so let's start with the general information. Now, what I'm reading to you is verbatim from the archives.gov. So that's not, there's no fluff here. There's no, you know, guy with crazy hair sticking up blaming everything on aliens. I want to bring to you something that is historically based, but it is documented. That's part that I think that's missing a lot within the realms of ufology, or real documents that you can get out and you can physically touch. And we'll get into the phenomena. You know, we got to get into that. But for right now, let's dig into the real meat of this, because you can take this to your friends, to your family who are, you know, I guess, go back and forth on UFOs, and you can say, hey, at least the government is documenting it. It's in the National Archives. So anyways, here we go. General information. The United States Air Force retired to the custody of the National Archives its records on Project Blue Book relating to the investigations of unidentified flying objects. Project Blue Book has been declassified, and the records are available for examination in our research room. The project closed in 1969, and we have no information on sightings after that date. The National Archives has received numerous inquiries concerning documents identified as Majestic 12 and briefing document Operation Majestic 12. We have made extensive searches among the records in our custody of the United States Air Force and the Joint Chiefs of Staff to identify these documents. The Truman and Eisenhower libraries have also searched their holdings for any references to or copies of these documents. In addition, the records of the National Security Council, NSC, for the Truman and Eisenhower administration are in the custody of the National Archives. Searches were made of the index to the NSC's policy paper and meeting minute files under the subjects MJ-12, Majestic, Unidentified Flying Objects, UFO, Flying Saucers, Extraterrestrial Biological Entities, and Aquarius. These searches were all negative, with the exception of a memorandum for General Twining from Robert Cutler, Special Assistant to the President, subject NCS/MJ-12 Special Studies Project, dated July 14th, 1954. The memorandum, one page, refers to a briefing to take place on July 16th. The memorandum does not identify MJ-12 or the purposes of the briefing. Now, Project Blue Book, the reference report. Textual records of Project Blue Book and the documentation relating to investigations of unidentified flying objects, excluding names of people involved in the sightings, are now available for research in the National Archives building. The records include approximately 2 cubic feet of unarranged project or administrative files, 37 cubic feet of files in which individual sightings are arranged chronologically, and 3 cubic feet of records relating to Office of Special Investigation, OSI, portions of which are arranged chronologically by OSI district and by Overseas Command. A cubic foot of records comprises about 2,000 pages. Finding aids for these records include a file for the project files, or a file list for the project files, and an index to individual sightings entered by date and by location. Access to Blue Book textual records is by means of 94 rolls of 35-millimeter microfilm T-1206 in the National Archives Microfilm Reading Room. The first microfilm roll includes a list of contents for all of the rolls and the finding aids. Photographs scattered among the textual records have also been filmed separately on the last two rolls. Motion picture film, sound recordings, and some still pictures are maintained by the motion picture and sound and video branch and the still picture branch. United States Air Force fact sheet concerning UFOs and Project Blue Book. The following is a copy of the U.S. Air Force fact sheet distributed by Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in January 1985. United States Air Force, Public Affairs, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, Ohio, 45433. UFOs and Project Blue Book. On December 17, 1969, the Secretary of the Air Force announced the termination of Project Blue Book, the Air Force program for the investigation of UFOs. From 1947 to 1969, a total of 12,618 sightings were reported to Project Blue Book. Of these, 701 remain unidentified. The project was headquartered at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, whose personnel no longer receive, document, or investigate UFO reports. The decision to discontinue UFO investigations was based on an evaluation of a report prepared by the University of Colorado entitled Scientific Study of Unidentified Flying Objects. A review of the University of Colorado's report by the National Archive, National Academy of Sciences, past UFO studies and Air Force experience investigating UFOs reports during the 1940s, 50s, and 60s. As a result of these investigations and studies and experience gained from the investigation UFO reports since 1948, the conclusions of Project Blue Book are 1. No UFO reported, investigated, and evaluated by the Air Force has ever given any indication of threat to our national security. 2. There has been no evidence submitted to or discovered by the Air Force that sightings categorized as unidentified represent technological developments or principles beyond the range of present-day scientific knowledge. And 3, there has been no evidence indicating that sightings categorized as unidentified are extraterrestrial vehicles. With the termination of Project Blue Book, the Air Force regulations establishing and controlling the program for investigating and analyzing UFOs were rescinded. Documentation regarding the former Blue Book investigation has been permanently transferred to the Military Reference Branch, National Archives and Records Administration, Washington, D.C., 20408, and is available for public review and analysis. Since Project Blue Book was closed, nothing has happened to indicate that the Air Force ought to resume investigating UFOs. Because of these considerable costs to the Air Force in the past and the tight funding of Air Force needs today, there is no likelihood the Air Force will become involved with UFO investigation again. There are a number of universities and professional scientific organizations, such as the American Association for the Advancement of Science, which has considered UFO phenomena during periodic meetings and seminars. In addition, a list of private organizations interested in aerial phenomena may be found in Gale's Encyclopedia of Associations, Edition 8, Volume 1, pages 432 to 433. Such timely review of the situation by private groups ensures that sound evidence will not be overlooked by the scientific community. A person calling the base to report a UFO is advised to contact a private or professional organization, as mentioned above, or to contact a local law enforcement agency if the caller feels his or her public safety is endangered. Periodically, it is erroneously stated that the remains of extraterrestrial visitors are or have been stored at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. There are not now, nor have ever been, any extraterrestrial visitors or equipment on Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Oh, that's rich. Majestic 12, or the MJ-12 reference report. The National Archives have received many requests for documentation and information about, quote, Project MJ-12. Many of these inquiries concern a memorandum from Robert Cutler to General Nathan Twining, dated July 14th, 1945, or 54. This particular document poses problems for the following reasons. One, the document was located in Record Group 341, Entry 267. The series is filed by a top secret registered number. This document does not bear such a number. Two, the document is filed in the folder T41846. There are no other documents in the folder regarding NSC MJ-12. Three, researchers on the staff of the National Archives have searched in the records of the Secretary of Defense, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Headquarters, United States Air Force, and in other related files. No further information has been found on this subject. Four, inquiries to the United States Air Force, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and the National Security Council failed to produce further information. Five, the Freedom of Information Office of the National Security Council informed the National Archives that top secret restricted information is a marking which did not come to use at the National Security Council until the Nixon administration. The Eisenhower Presidential Library also confirmed that this particular marking was not used during the Eisenhower administration. Six, the document in question does not bear an official government letterhead or watermark. The NARA conservation specialist examined the paper and determined it was a ribbon copy prepared on Diction onion skin. The Eisenhower Library has examined a representative sample of the documents in its collection of the Cutler papers. All documents in this sample created by Mr. Cutler while he served on the NSC staff have an eagle watermark on the bond paper. The onion skin carbon copies have either an eagle watermark or no watermark at all. Most documents sent out by the NSC were prepared on White House letterhead paper. For the brief period when Mr. Cutler left the NSC, his carbon copies were prepared on Prestige onion skin. Number seven, the National Archives searched the official meeting minute files of the National Security Council and found no record of a NSC meeting on July 16, 1954. A search for all NSC meeting minutes for July 1954 found no mention of MJ-12 nor Majestic. Number eight, the judicial, fiscal, and social branch searched the indices of the NSC records and found no listing for MJ-12, Majestic, unidentified flying objects, UFO, flying saucers, or flying disc. NAGA found a memo, NAJA found a memo in a folder titled Special Meeting July 16, 1956, which indicated that NSC members would be called to a civil defense exercise on July 16, 1956. 10. The Eisenhower Library states in a letter to the Military Reference Branch, dated July 16, 1987. President Eisenhower's appointment books contain no entry for a special meeting on July 16, 1954, which might have included a briefing on MJ-12. Even when the president had off-the-record meetings, the appointment books contained entries indicating the time of the meeting and the participants. The Declassification Office of the National Security Council has informed us that it has no records of any declassification action having been taken on this memorandum or any other documents of this alleged project. Robert Cutler, at the direction of President Eisenhower, was visiting overseas military installations on the day he supposedly issued this memorandum, July 14th, 1954. The administration series in Eisenhower's papers as president contains Cutler's memorandum and report to the president upon his return from the trip. The memorandum is dated July 20th, 1954, and also refers to Cutler's visits to installations in Europe and North Africa between July 3rd and 15. Also, within the NSC, staff papers is a memorandum date July 3rd, 1954, from Cutler to his two subordinates, James S. L.A. and J. Patrick Cohn, explaining how they should handle NSC administrative matters during his absence. One would assume that if the memorandum to Twining were genuine, Lay or Cohn would have signed it. When certifying a document, the under seal of the National Archives, we attest that the reproduction is a true copy of a document in our custody. We do not authenticate documents or the information contained in a document. So as we read this, and I'm sure many of you, as you're listening, you're probably getting online afterwards and you're going to read this as well at archives.gov. It seems like if there was this meeting of the Majestic 12, if there was all this containment of investigations off of Project Blue Book, then it would seem that what we just read is what we would call a cover-up or a cover-over. Now, we know for a fact that the government lies to us, and we know for a fact that in the past, the United States has covered up special operations missions and special projects, and then we're not, you know, found out until decades later. Well, you know, that's more or less what we see here. We have to take this this time to do our due diligence with our research. You know, just because it's in the National Archives doesn't mean that I'm going to take everything the National Archives says as gold. It's just what was archived. Now, you can obviously probably put yourself in the situation that if you were General Twining and you were being briefed on anything about UFO disclosure, about UFOs that were within the presence of, you know, the United States, and our military has any involvement with that, for the time being, I can see how those conversations would be just disappeared. You know, I can see how these conversations would be let go, told not to write down, you didn't see anybody here. You know, I can see how that would happen. I think many of you can nod your head and say, yeah, I can see how the Air Force lied to us or just didn't make a record of it. I guess the point of this would be, from the Eisenhower Library to all these other officials that are involved with this, even though they said there's no UFO craft, there was no extraterrestrials that were found, I still find it very funny that we have thousands upon thousands of witnesses and cases around not just the country, but within our own military and the government, who have reported seeing these objects. And then you get this, where the government and its various organizations tell you, no, you didn't see that. We didn't see that. We haven't heard of that. And if we haven't heard of it, we're not going to archive it. You know, but that's the same thing with the whole Bigfoot story, right? Thousands, probably tens of thousands of people have reported Sasquatch or Bigfoot, but no one takes them serious. No one takes you serious because for the longest time, you weren't supposed to know anything about that, especially the UFOs. You weren't supposed to know anything about that. It was still all being investigated. It was being researched. And plausible deniability is one of the best weapons that the government has. And then the ATIP project comes out, and everybody's shocked. Oh, look at that. The Pentagon has been hiding their research into advanced aerospace threats or UFOs or unidentified aerial phenomena, I think that's what it's called, or UFOs, the many different craft that are seen under the water as well. And then the government comes right out and says, oh yeah, we've been monitoring so much to the point that we've spent $22 million on it. You know, this is I just wait for this exposure to continuously come out to see where it is that we go from here. And you just have to ask, you know, things have calmed down in the realms of exposing the UFO stuff from the government side. We got the great Tic Tac video of the UFOs and our pilots from the Navy and their experiences. And there have been various, documentaries where this has been in. And we just have to consider, whenever we go through this, how much of it that's being exposed is what the government wanted to release. What about the stuff the government didn't want to release? Now I am standing in the line waiting for everybody else, because I know, working for the government for a long time, that if we want to cover up something and not talk about it, we just won't tell anybody. And that's just the way that goes. However, if we do want to tell you something, it will be cherry-picked. It will be the cleanest, the nicest. The lawyers will sign off on it. Command will sign off on it. Washington will sign off on it. And then, after much, I guess you could say, adjudication, then it'll be released. So you always get the most sanitized version of what the government gives you. It's what our narrative will say. And do not think for a second that the Air Force pilots or Navy pilots that were involved in the tic-tac-toe UFO incident, do not think for a second they weren't told how to describe what they saw. Not that they couldn't, but there's a certain way you will speak about this, and then there's a certain way you won't. One of these days, the truth will really come out. But unfortunately, we have to wait until that one brave soul decides to really come out with everything, or it's a deathbed confession. So, when we talk about UFOs, we can't always trust what we're seeing right now. We know the rumors that the Vatican, and we're going to get into the Vatican and what they do with UFOs. But we know that the Vatican currently is watching through the Lucifer telescope. They're watching and waiting for advanced extraterrestrial life that it'll, I guess you could say, be heading in our direction. And we know that the Pope came out and he said that, if UFOs were real and then aliens came to this world, I would be willing to baptize an alien. But actually, the alien would baptize us because they would know more about spirituality or whatever crap he talks about. So, I mean, you just have to shake your head at this nonsense with what these world leaders know and what they just refuse to tell you. You know, sometimes I ask myself, what is the harm in knowing everything about UFOs? Is the knowledge of UFOs more dangerous than the knowledge of thermonuclear weapons? Is the disclosure of UFOs more dangerous than the releasing and the disclosure of the releasing of biological weapons? What is it that they're hiding, that they're willing to kill people over? What is it that they don't want uncovered, that they're willing to lock up the documents for generations? And then we have to ask ourselves, why now? Why in 2017 did we just now hear about Project ATIP? Why is it that we just now are starting to see the Tic Tac UFO films when they've been around for a long time? Why is it that just now the people involved in that are being able to come out and do interviews, even to the point that the guy that was in charge, the director of the ATIP program, now has his own show after leaving the federal government? He now has his own show on the History Channel. And of course, what is it over? UFOs. Are we being led in a certain narrative to a certain direction, a certain course that could lead to a historical, never before imagined or heard of revealing of what the UFOs actually are? Many people have said that the aerial phenomena, the vehicles, are nuts and bolts vehicles, but they aren't all. We have seen many, many videos of shape-shifting balls of light, of these various different aerial phenomena that look like ribbons or serpents in the sky. Balls of light that can then manifest itself into multiple balls of light. And then they almost always align themselves in some sort of a triangle, which there supposedly is a nomenclature for these triangle-like UFOs that we see, and that's the TR-3B. So, as a whole, we know quite a lot about UFOs. But how well do we know the history of them? And who are the players that are really involved in this? That will be the goal of this journey, is to try to uncover as much of this as possible. We will be getting a lot of speakers on, some you've heard of. And hopefully, just hopefully, with every interview and with every new presentation of the series, we can start to put this inquisitorial package together. And if need be, you can be able to present this to somebody and say, hey, look, this guy sat down doing hours of research and put together these presentations or speakings about the history of UFOs in America. And currently, we're only going to do the United States history of UFOs. They're everywhere. We have military incidents in Europe, Mexico, I think Brazil, Colombia, Argentina. We have them in Iraq, Afghanistan. We have them in Russia. I mean, there's not one area around the globe that the government has not reported or the people have not reported seeing unidentified flying objects or strange lights in the sky. It is actually a not so common phenomena at this point. And there are plenty of people who mistake this phenomena, from satellites to planes to other different types of unidentified objects that may not be alien in nature. That's the great part about this, is we get to pick at all these different topics, and we just get to dig into them and explore them. So if you have any good UFO stories, and let's just say by Friday, the best story, we'll go over it. But, I'll give you a but, it needs to be kind of condensed because I only have 55 minutes worth of talking. So if you have any videos, if you have any good photos of unidentified flying objects or of other, you know, creepy things of nature, the cryptids, which will be a eventual topic we will surf over, then bring them to me. We'll discuss them. We'll share them. But I will tell you this much. I vet a lot of stuff. And I don't talk about a lot of stuff because I vet them. So you're not going to hear fantastical tales. You know, you're not going to hear all this. You're not going to hear all this bunch of crap on here where people just make up stories so that they can get 5 minutes of fame. If I even feel at 1 second that it's a made up story, it's not getting read. So make sure it's something that you can somewhat somehow document. Now then, getting back into this series of documents that is on the archives, let's go into the Roswell incident. All right. The National Archives has been unable to locate any documentation among the Project Blue Book records, which discuss the 1947 incident in Roswell, New Mexico. Before we go any further into this, I want you to understand something. The war for World War II ended in 1945. Almost immediately after, with Operation Paperclip, is when we started to get Nazi scientists transferred over to America. Wernher von Braun being probably the most notable. We know the Nazis were doing a lot of stuff. We know the Nazis had hundreds, and I've reviewed them all, hundreds of experimental aircraft and rocketry. Most of it was only wrote on paper and was never actually conceived into a real nuts and bolts craft. But there are many craft that have been seen that actually are identical to what the Nazis actually already created. So when we look at the Roswell incident, we have to ask ourselves, this was a crashed object. A nuts and bolts machine. Russia had the same access to the scientists and technology that we do. People like to blame this on Russia. Maybe so. I'll tell you that the amount of dirt it took to cover up the Roswell incident is staggering. And one of these days, we're going to really break down the entire Roswell incident. But for right now, let's just hear what the National Archives has to say about it. On September 8th, 1994, the Secretary of the Air Force, Sheila E. Wendell, announced that the United States Air Force had completed its study to locate records that relate to the alleged 1947 UFO incident near Roswell, New Mexico. Pro-UFO researchers claim that an extraterrestrial spacecraft and its alien occupants were recovered near Roswell in July of 1947, and that this fact was kept from the public. At the request of Congressman Stephen H. Schiff, a Republican from New Mexico, the General Accounting Office, GAO, initiated an audit in February of 1994 to locate all records relating to the Roswell incident and to determine if any such records were properly handled. The GAO, their audit, was completed and the results published by the headquarters, U.S. Air Force, in 1995. The publication is entitled The Roswell Report, Fact versus Fiction in the New Mexico Desert. The publication may be obtained from most U.S. government depository library. The call number is ISBN 0-16-048023-X. The Government Accounting Office. Their audit involved a number of government agencies, but focused on the Air Force to support this audit, and the Air Force initiated a systematic search of current Air Force's offices, as well as numerous archives and record centers, which might help explain the incident. The Air Force officials also interviewed a number of persons who may have had knowledge of the events. Prior to the events, Secretary Wendell released those persons from any previous security obligations that may have restricted their statements. The Air Force, their research did not locate or develop any information that the Roswell incident was a UFO event, nor was there any indication of a cover-up by the government. Information obtained through exhaustive records, searches, and interviews indicated that the materials recovered near Roswell was consistent with a balloon device of the type used in a then-classified project. No records indicated or even hinted that the recovery of alien bodies or extraterrestrials material. All documentation related to this case are now declassified in the information in the public domain. Documentation has been turned over to the Office of the Air Force Historian. So, do you really think that everything has been declassified? I just don't believe it. You know, you don't have to declassify a document that was never wrote down, a conversation that was never recorded. And you also can't document or declassify documents that were burned. And that is how that's done. So once again, we have to ask ourselves, and please leave it in the comments, because this will also be on Rumble and on YouTube on the American Vindicta Show sites. Put down in the comments, what do you think happened? Has everything actually been declassified? Do you know any more of the story? We know that there are plenty of witnesses to this story that contradict what the government states. But once again, the government demonizes people, and it will attempt to bankrupt you, humiliate you, or threaten you for your silence. So once again, we have to ask ourselves, is this everything when it comes to Roswell? Probably not. I would like to know, because there are speculations that the craft was Russian make, that the, I think it's three alien bodies that were recovered were not really alien, but they were deformed children that the Russians had shoved into a craft that they launched across what, the United States. It ran out of fuel, and then it glided all the way ungracefully into the crash area of the New Mexico desert. I don't know, man. Something doesn't make sense to me about it. You know, not too far within the vicinity, linear-wise, would be Nevada, the Area 51, and the various areas that are there that we now know of, but also the White Sands of New Mexico. That's another research area. So, you know, we just have to ask ourselves, was this a hidden program that went wrong that the Americans were doing based off Nazi technology? Or was it really a weather balloon? I just don't believe it was a weather balloon. I really don't. Now, within the whole Roswell incident, and that's going to be the main discussion for tomorrow. But what some of the witnesses that were there that were threatened by the government said, that there was bits of metal that you could crumple up like aluminum foil, and then it would re-expand back out and regain its original shape. That some of the metal was very light, very strong metal, but it also had strange, I guess you could say, alien writings on it. I don't know. I don't know what to make of it, because I have learned through my time of being in law enforcement, being in the military, that there's always another side of the story. And even in the realms of police investigations, we know that there's always two sides of the coin. There's always the victim and then the offender. And we have to listen to both sides, because sometimes the offender can very quickly become the victim who just happened to beat up the original victim a little harder. So that's part of the point, the introduction of this new series. Stick around. I think you're going to like it. We have some, I guess you say, some big names that we'll hopefully be getting on this. I talked with L.A. Marzulli over the weekend at the Hear the Watchman conference. L.A. is a ufologist. He is a Nephilim or Raphaim, however you want to say it, expert, going down into Paracas, Peru, and doing all different types of investigations of mounds in America, and uncovering, unearthing a lot of things with a archaeological and paleontological aspect on it. And I appreciate that, because we get too much hocus pocus in this you know, little realm of ours when we talk about UFOs. It's part of the reasons why I detest ancient aliens, because a lot of the things that they say, that they describe, we can't find documentation for a lot of it. Now, once again, documentation can disappear, but a lot of it feels just very New Age religion style stuff. You know, the space children will come down and they seed into the life on Earth, and, you know, the space fathers and blah, 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 all that crap. Now, I will say that the Native Americans also believe that too. But I'll be willing to sit down and listen to the elders of the Native Americans before I will many ufologist researchers. And just to give you a little bit of a sample of topics that we will eventually cover, we will be going over Skinwalker Ranch. I have been fascinated with Skinwalker Ranch for about the last 4 years. And I have laughed many times at some of the people I know that's in this industry who have said that they may go to Skinwalker Ranch, that they may, have something to do with it for investigations. And I always laughed, bring Doug along. If you need a gun or if you just need a guy, I'm willing to go. I'm crazy enough to do it. Even though there's a lot more spiritual stuff that's happening there, I believe, than there is UFOs, the UFOs are still there. So, I guess we can end it there. I want to tell you that tomorrow's topic will be the Roswell incident. And then we're going to go back over the other incidents that happened during the World War II time frame. Between what the Annenerbe were seeing in Germany, and then also what our pilots were seeing during World War II with the Foo Fighters. And if you ever go into the Nazi series, which is the series are all labeled now on the AmericanVindictusShow.com down at the bottom. So all you who've been chewing my butt out for saying that a lot of these episodes weren't labeled, they are labeled now. The Nazi series, I believe it's an 8 or 9 part series. We do talk about UFOs in there and the Nazi related, I guess you could say, craft. There are still questions that need to be answered about Operation High Jump and the Antarctic. But I researched that to the point that I was probably spending 10 hours a day trying to find as much as possible. Did it for about 3 days, and I couldn't find very much more. Everything else was speculations and people just regurgitating things. But I went as deep into documentation that the government has that I could. And I think that's another aspect of this that people need to understand, that the government does document quite a bit of this. It's just that you don't need to take it as the holy grail just because the government admitted it. The government admits all different types of stuff all the time, but they always leave out bits and pieces. And that's where, you know, people like me and Steve Quayle and L.A. Marzulli and Tim Alberino and others, it's up to us to fill the gaps of knowledge. And also for the witnesses that are out there, if you ever witness anything like this, the best thing you can do, just like witnessing a crime, get a piece of paper, get your phone, get this thing out, get your phone out, and record what you saw, or at least the direction of what you saw in the area of time and date, weather, day or night, and then give a brief, well-determined description or even accurate depiction of a drawing of what you saw. And then I would tell you to contact someone within your area who's a ufologist. The more we can catalog these events, and then we can produce these events to the government, the more pressure comes upon the government. I'll give you an example before we go. Skinwalker Ranch got made really, really famous because of the gross amounts of, I guess you could say the gross amounts of the hauntings that happened there, but really the cattle mutilations. So much that during that time, then all this was happening, cattle mutilations were popping up all around America. And the Cattlemen's Association of America, and it was either a congressman or a senator, I'll have the proper information for you. They actually spoke about it for a couple hours for a congressional hearing, saying, what in the hell can we do about this? Because it was an invasion on people's rights in a destruction of property, costing people a lot of money. You know, I know how much cows cost. It's a lot of money. So the government has brought up before that there is a link between a dangerous activity and unidentified flying objects. And then the government has admitted to us that $22 million was given to ATIP to do the research into what type of identified threats there were from unidentified flying objects to the United States government, to our security of the homeland. We don't know what those threats are. We were never officially debriefed about what they found either. So there's a lot that they're holding on to. Just because some things are declassified doesn't mean everything gets declassified. We still don't know jack crap about Kennedy. Somebody does. Somebody out there definitely knows who pulled the trigger or who was paid to pull the trigger. Probably one of the best men out there, and I'm going to get him on one day to talk about that, the whole JFK conspiracy, is Dave Hodges. So that's all I got for you. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you really do enjoy this new episode. It will be airing today, not just on GS Radio and KYAH, but it'll also be on the Rumble channel. This will also be on the YouTube channel, God willing. YouTube doesn't cut my legs out from underneath me. And if you feel like donating to this channel, to this podcast, you can donate at theamericanvindictashow.com. I would like to give a big thank you to the sponsors because I haven't mentioned them at all. So Steve Quayle, SQ Metals. Then we also have Ready Made Resources with Bob Griswold. We have Jeff over at mountain-state-survival.com for all your preparatory needs, and also My Patriot Supply. So thank you very much to the sponsors. Thank you very much to everyone that is out there. If you wish to be a sponsor of the show, please contact me via the show's website, AmericanVindictaShow.com. And if you like what you hear, if you like this information, and you want to help me out, spread it out to people. Let's get this information out there. And please subscribe to me on YouTube and also on Rumble. Other than that, ladies and gentlemen, you have a great day, and I hope you look forward to tomorrow's episode. My name is Doug Thornton. You've been listening to American Vindicta. I'm out.
All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.